The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Today, we have a very interesting man. We've had him on before, and we're going to continue to have him on. Chairman Gerard Casar, known to his friends like me as Jerry Casar. So glad to see you back, Jerry. You're chairman of the Conservative Party. How's the Conservative Party doing in New York State?
I think we're doing well. I will tell you this. A review of the November elections would show that the Conservative Party, with the Republican Party, did make gains around the state. You know, the most notable one, of course, was that Hempstead Town the supervisor spot, where the candidate actually won by the difference of the votes on the Conservative Party line. And for those who don't know, Hempstead, Long Island, is a town of 780,000 people. So I thought we had a good election. And I will tell you this, although there's been reports out there that, you know, party enrollments like ours have been going down, the reality is since in the last year, our enrollment actually went up 1,000 people. So, I think we're doing okay.
In a state of 16 million or so or more, is 1,000 people noticeable?
Well, it's not in the way you're statistically indicating it, but what I am suggesting to you is that there's been so many reports out there that parties like mine are losing enrollees in the thousands, and we have not experienced that. We have been on or about 150,000 enrollees, you know, running from about 145 to 155 for at least 10 years. So, I mean, we're very consistent in our enrollment, and we're very consistent in our statewide vote, which runs in that, you know, 230 to 270,000 range. So I kind of know what I've got as the state chairman. I kind of know what I'm working off of, and I'm comfortable where we are right now.
So I want to ask you, because you've led us right into this question of how many members you have or how many people voted on your line the last time. We know that Andrew Cuomo, and I have not been silent about this, has come up with his handpicked Democratic chairman, Jay Jacobs, a so-called commission, which is now, I think, threatening to put all third parties out of business. But you and the Conservative Party probably have the best chance, believe it or not, of surviving that onslaught. You want to talk about that?
Well, based on what the commission did, we would survive. There's really no data that would indicate that we could not manage on the numbers that they've created. So when they say 2% of the presidential vote usually runs between a low of 7 million and a high of absolute high of 8 million. So you're talking 140 to 160,000 votes. That's never an issue for us, as well as for governor, they're talking about 130,000 votes, and that's never an issue. But there is an issue here. We are in court on December 12th. We object to the commission report. We do not believe Jacobs or the governor have the right to go out there and say who lives and who dies. And it's obviously incredibly politically motivated by a gubernatorial vendetta against the Working Families Party and a Jay Jacobs vendetta against the Independence Party. Now, you may say that's not my problem. Well, it is my problem, because they're attempting to do death by 1,000 slashes of people they do not agree with, and I do not intend to allow our party to just accept this. And additionally, we strongly oppose the public financing piece. Now, many of the good government groups, Alan, oppose this particular piece of the proposal on a lot of grounds that are from the left, but we simply oppose it from the perspective that we do not want to see $100 million spent on political campaigns and additionally, we do not believe, and I do not believe, that I should be having my tax dollars supporting someone who I do not believe in. But I've used the argument robocalls. I don't want to pay some. I do not want my tax dollars to go so somebody can start sending out robocalls to elect somebody that I do not support. So we're in court, and we, you know, today there was this all this talk about the severability clause. We can knock this part of this out in court. We'll knock the whole thing out.
So let me see if I got this straight. We think, many of us think, I do, and I'm not a conservative, as you know, by any means.
Yeah.
Nevertheless,
you're a thoughtful person.
This is just wrong. I mean, you know,
yeah,
you got a governor who's decided that he has a new nickname. I gave it to him, Tough Guy Andrew. And he's going to show everybody how tough he is. And so he says, all right, I don't want third parties. Now, a lot of other states don't allow this third party voting the way that we do in New York.
Right.
But it's clear he's getting even. So I certainly agree with you on that. On the other hand, I don't agree with you. I mean, I think money talks, all others walk. So that while you have a position and it's a legitimate one, I don't agree with it. That's all.
No, I mean, that's fine. If everybody agreed with me, I might think it'd be a better state, but you wouldn't.
You'd be governor.
Clearly, I very much enjoy talking with people who disagree with me because we both become smarter when the conversation's over.
Okay. So have you made any common cause with the other third parties? I mean,
common cause, yeah. But we have obviously been, and it's known, working with the Working Families Party. Our cases are not identical. They, of course, do not oppose the public financing.
Of course not.
But the judge has, I know this, the judge has joined the cases, so both ours and theirs are being argued on December 12th. The judge says he's going to do a summary judgment, so it should not take a long time for us to get an answer based on the paperwork that's been submitted by both sides. The Democrats have, when I say the Democrats, the commission, the assembly and Senate, attempted to get it dismissed. And the judge yesterday made it clear that we would be in court on December 12th, which is another setback, I believe, as part of a number of setbacks the Jacobs has had on the legal aspects of this. I think they've been concerned from day one about the legal aspects. They've been attempting to maneuver through several of their attorneys to delay or dismiss. We've been successful in our arguments in that, as far as that's concerned. So we're very hopeful on the 12th. And like I said, if based on my understanding now, without severability, we win part of it, we win all of it. That's at least my understanding.
So let me go back to this, if I can, Jerry. You reference Jacobs, but you're really referencing Cuomo, aren't you? I mean,
true. But I mean, I think Jacobs adds an additional layer of animosity towards third parties into the equation. Mm-hmm. I think
he's the chair of the Democratic Party.
Right. So I think I think he has it out for the Independence Party. It actually happened. The Independence Party did support the candidate that he, not his candidate, in the Hempstead race. And although the much bigger vote was on the Conservative Party line, I mean, he has been annoyed at them since day one that they did not do what he wanted them to do in Nassau County. So, I mean, these guys are ruling the roost in a way where they should not be holding policy-making government positions, and he should not have been the de facto chair of that commission. I mean they want to play everything down. But one of the things that was different this time was the enormous amount of media scrutiny on this commission. I mean, you all, and certainly including you, have done a yeoman's work in shining light on what was occurring here. And that the governor doesn't like that. He has never liked, he's never liked to see sunshine on a lot of his proposals.
Do you think that's why he doesn't come back on the air with us after being on like 50 weeks in a row? I mean,
that whole thing where he likes to do press conferences on conference calls, or he calls them at the very, very last minute. You know, the LCA room finds out at, 9 a.m. there's a press conference at 11 a.m. I mean, those are little tactics which the general public might not really think about much. But, people that are in the business, it really can sour you on the governor.
Jerry Kasar, chairman of the Conservative Party. I have a couple of insiders questions I hope I can ask you. One of them is judges will have to make these rulings. And judges are either elected or appointed by politicians. And so I'm asking you this. Do you trust them?
Well, I trust that there's so much jurisprudence out there that it really creates issues for judges that are not, you know, that are not following what is very well established procedures. Then they get hurt on the appeals. You ask, do I trust them? Yeah, I do trust them. I do trust them, and you know, and we've chosen to use this particular mechanism, which could make its way up to the Court of Appeals at some point. So yes, I do trust them.
Interesting, because I don't, and I just watched. Yeah. I know we're going to disagree with this because you and I have both watched the president appoint a couple of people to the Supreme Court, and yeah, all of a sudden he's getting the decisions which one would have predicted from his appointees. So, you know, the judiciary is supposed to be impartial, but I don't know that it is.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. There's going to be rulings, and some people are going to agree or not agree. There's nothing corrupt about the president's appointments these decisions. They're philosophically, they tend to be philosophically conservative. But as you've also seen, the Supreme Court does have some of these swing votes in there that have been put in place by Republican presidents, such as the chief judge, who is right now contemplating with his membership this issue concerning Second Amendment rights in the state, and he's making it sound like he thinks the issue is moot, whereas certainly the more conservative judges there do not consider that. So, I mean, the chief judge is a Republican appointment. I don't agree with what he's indicating, but he does appear to be saying something like that.
But appointed by different Republican presidents.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I guess each president has a different, a little bit of a different criteria. But I will tell you this: that court, that court has swung in, you know, clearly 5-4 conservative in general. And that's okay with me.
Jerry Kasar is the chairman of the Conservative Party of New York State. So I guess there is a question on the Senate itself. For years, the Senate was run by the Republicans and the conservatives. Now, the Democrats have taken hold, and they will probably gerrymander in their own interest just as the Republicans did, or at least, if you're asking me, a more fair interest, because there are just so many more Democrats than Republicans in the state. Okay, so let's assume all of that is true. We see that Republicans may be contemplating, and maybe this is my projection, deserting the Republican Party in the Senate because, as the old saying goes, the minority in the state Senate has the power of warm spit. What do you make of that?
Well, I do think that the Senate has the Republicans have suffered a bit from some announced retirements or individuals looking to run for higher office. I will tell you that under the constitutional amendment passed in the early part of this decade, which, you know, the Republicans pushed through Skelos, the reapportionment will be done a little differently. There is a requirement that let me rephrase that. You really have to have everybody on, if one of the legislative bodies, the Senate or Assembly, has less than has one third, two thirds of a minority party or better, they have the ability to protect themselves in the judicial system now. And once again, it could go back to your original point about how the judiciary works, but it's going to be a little fairer, a little even more evenly, even-handed by law this time around.
Jerry, isn't that good for the Democrats? Because, in other words, there's so many more Democrats in New York State.
Heavily concentrated in New York City.
Yes, yeah, so.
Very heavily concentrated in New York City, and you can only still get X amount of legislators out of the city. So I will say to you that your point is valid, but I don't think it's a little more even when you take the perspective of votes versus enrollment. It's a little more even-handed, but the city just really, really stands out as, you know, a heavy, heavy Democratic element.
Why is that?
I suspect
except for Staten Island, of course.
Yeah, Staten Island, and actually that whole 11th congressional district, which has got parts of Brooklyn, tends to be more conservative, and parts of Queens and all. I think what you really simply have here is that progressives, as well as individuals that look for governmental benefits, tend to have, for different reasons, congregated in the city. I mean, it's immigrants, the first stage immigrants into the country, those that first arrive, tend to be a little more needy, and they may be coming from places where they have such a different view of the world. Some of them are coming from, you know, socialistic, communist type places, that they see things differently, and it takes a time. Before individuals, I think, better appreciate what American society is about. And often it's not when they're living in the city. It's when they move to, Suffolk County or Rockland County, or begin making their way upstate or out of state. They then begin to see things, I think, a little differently. You're right.
There's no question that you're right about that. And we see, for example, that a lot of Republicans are Italian, and it takes maybe an Italian candidate like the Cuomos to make a dent in that.
Well, you know, over the years, there certainly has been an argument that New York State was a very, very politically heavy Italian, or Irish, or some of the traditional European countries, but the state has become far more diverse in the last 16 years or so, beyond New York City, the suburbs too. So, the Republican Party, the conservative parties have to outreach to all. You should know that, I'm Middle Eastern, I'm Catholic, but my family's from Syria and Lebanon, and I've always been involved in the conservative party. They migrated here, immigrated here at the, between 1910, 1920. But, I don't necessarily go out and think of myself as first thing as an Arab American. I just think of myself as an American. But I think sometimes people are surprised to hear about my roots. And when I was growing up at home, my parents spoke Arabic.
Hmm. Jerry, talk to me about the New York State budget deficit, with New York State facing a $6 billion budget deficit. That's a lot of money. The speaker of the state,
$1 billion, by the way, but why should we argue over just $100 million? What's $100 million among friends? It happens to be the campaign finance proposals money. So this was totally avoidable. It's known from day one that the Assembly and Senate Republicans were warning that this could occur. The state was arguing, as often happens, using fuzzy math, that there was money coming in from the federal government, which did not materialize, even though everybody was warned that based on what was being said, it would not materialize, as well as other gimmicky sort of stuff that I think the state budget division is becoming notorious for. The governor, you know when you were a kid and you were doing like these flow charts for your computer programming back in those days? You remember it was always the guy who did it the opposite. He did the program, then he created the flow chart. The governor ends up here telling people what he wants, and then they go out and make it happen, even if they've been warned repeatedly that it's not going to work.
Why are they doing that? In other words, why is the governor putting himself in this position of having borrowed so much money?
Well, I do think that for a long time he got away with it. And when you get into a third term, eventually the stuff catches up with you. And possibly he just simply made a horrible mistake contemplating certain things that he thought could happen, which would have protected him on this, which did not. You know, we had a budgetary problem prior to this thing going off the charts here. I mean, this is E.J. McMahon, the Empire group there, they've been talking about problems in state budgeting now for a couple of years. I think the governor in his first two or three years impressed people, which would appear to be a tight budgeting, and then it just became a political document for him. You know, he plays it to the progressives in many cases, who want to hear that we're going to do this and do that, and everything's got a price tag.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the president of the United States. There are those who think that in New York he's particularly unpopular, his ex-home state. He moved out of here and went to Florida. So is he a millstone around your neck as a conservative, as a Republican, or are you going to deny that?
Well, I'm going to say this. I think the data shows that the city of New York, it's very problematic. But when you get into the suburbs, it varies. And when you get outside the suburbs,
well, but not with you, not with Jerry, not with suburban women. Suburban women seem to have a negative on him. And what do you think that's about?
Well, I do think to some degree his style can his style can create a certain
style, as in grab them by the you know what?
No. I'm talking about definitely not that. I'm talking about the, possibly some of the tweeting, possibly the way he sometimes conducts himself in terms of his communications during the presidency, which could cause a person not to really look at his policies. And his policies are productive, and his campaign is going to have that challenge to make sure that the policies are up front, not possibly some of his mannerisms. And I think that is the challenge. I'm not going to make a prediction on how the suburbs are going to go, but I will say that he is, even the state polling, I mean, there's never been a point here where he has the Romney-type numbers or the McCain-type numbers. He's always been, that's the thing, prior to Trump, the last two or three presidential candidates we were running, including the, President Bush, were less popular in New York State than Donald Trump. So as much as I always hear he's less, some sort of a rock around our necks, he actually is more productive electorally in the state than with final numbers than those candidates were.
Okay, I'm going to give you the last word on that. I've got so much more. We only got a couple of minutes to go. Talk to me about Jay Cope. Now, Jay Cope, some people refer to it as Jay Joke, is the sort of hand-picked watchdog, but it hasn't done a very good job up until now of watching things. And now there's a question of who leaked about Joe Prococo. The governor says, not me. Did an ethics commission leak private information to Cuomo? What do you think?
Well, I think if the governor's office or the governor himself is making phone calls in to try to get information, is it really a leak or is it somebody just simply saying, hey, they're asking a question out of the second floor, the executive office there for the governor, and we'll get that information out there one way or the other. I mean, in my view, what they're really trying to do here is cover up the fact that the leak didn't start at Jacob. The request for a leak started in the governor's office. And that, and now you wonder who is going to actually investigate, because everybody's running for cover. The IG, it has done a horrendous job in checking into this. I mean, it's almost like they didn't investigate it. And this is a great concern. I mean, the public needs to be, the public cannot just have the legislature and the governor create mechanisms that just simply don't work in such an important area. And that's what's happened here.
You say you're for, conservatives say that they're for term limits for governor, lieutenant governor, comptroller, attorney general, and legislators. Well, I'll certainly go along with the legislature part of it. Yeah. But let me ask you this. Do you find much support for that?
Yeah, we do. We do. Now, in politics, the question becomes what really moves voters. We find support for it philosophically, but I'm not sure it becomes a gigantic election issue where people, decide one way or the other. I mean, I do think the governor will have a very heavy hill to overcome going for a fourth term. Fourth term. Because in a way, people are beginning to believe he should be term limited. But a lot of that comes down to who we run to. So I do find that people generally agree. I think polling shows that people generally agree, but I'm not sure it's a gigantic.
Have you got anybody? Do you have anybody?
We are talking to a variety of people, myself and Nick Langworthy.
Yeah,
some you'll know, some
chair,
you will not
yeah.
know. And of course, raising the funds for a candidate is a big part of the issue here. You cannot, the best of people cannot run without the ability to communicate a message.
Well, you're for a flat tax, right? The Conservatives are for a flat tax.
I mean, you brought this up last time. You're setting me up here. I generally support a flat tax. Now, I know what's going to happen here. You're going to now go right at me on this.
Let's go.
Let's go to the next step. Hit me.
Well, obviously, under a flat tax, if you have a lot of money and you're an ultra-billionaire, you will pay less proportionally, you know, and the poor people will suffer.
Well, we believe, generally speaking, the flat tax, we certainly believe there should be, you know, as the President Trump did, there should be, less levels, and he did obviously reduce the number of the number of levels, but
we don't even know if the guy pays his taxes. He doesn't submit, you know, he doesn't show us his tax returns, shouldn't he?
I would like him to show his tax returns. But having said that, I do not think it's the right of the government to force him to show his tax returns. Mm-hmm. You know, every individual should be treated equally by the New York State Legislature. You can't have you can't be doing Donald Trump legislation alone. And, you know, and that has been argued. And now we're at a level here, I believe, in the U.S. Supreme Court that this issue is being discussed. Or not discussed, right? Didn't they more or less push this off the other day? So, would I like to see these tax returns? Yeah, probably I would. But at the same time, I do not think he should be required to. It's his right, and it's the same right you and I would have if we were running for public office.
You've been listening to The Capital Connection this week with Gerard, otherwise known to his friends like me as Jerry Kosar, chairman of the New York State Conservative Party. I'm Alan Chartok. Jerry, again, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you'll come back. While we may disagree on almost everything, it's great to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much.